At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
On this episode of Two Dudes, One Cart, John and I sit down with Claire Cameron of the Claire Cameron Golf Academy. Claire has a terrific junior background. She played for the University of Kentucky. She's now a teaching professional. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Two Dudes, One Cart podcast. And as always, thank you for listening. All right, everybody. We are back once again, and we are joined by Claire Cameron. I just talking to her for a little bit. She's pretty humble, and I just wanted to read off this abbreviated but a massive list. 42
yes.
total yep. tournament wins as a junior, five U.S. girls junior championships, selected as one of five Americans to play in the Orange Bowl International Tournament, five top five and nine top 10 finishes on the American Junior Golf Association Tour, won the 2014 AJGA qualifier in Columbus and finished second at the 2015 AJGA Stacey Lewis Open, three-time Indiana Golf Association Player of the Year, 14 wins on the Golf Week Junior Tour, the 2013 Indiana Girls State Champion at age 14, which you were the youngest to do so, 2018, you were inducted into the Golf Week Junior Hall of Fame, played in two U.S. Open qualifiers in 2015 and 2016. And in 2016, she finished 21st behind eight pros and 12 collegiate athletes. 2017, 2018, a full ride scholarship at University of Kentucky. 2020, turned professional. 2022, you became a teaching professional. So, Claire, I had to do a little research when I started looking
at
all the things you'd accomplished. And only one out of about 30 to 40 girls of what I could find actively or semi-regularly play golf. Only about one out of 4,800 play an organized AJGA golf. So who sparked this for you? Who fanned those flames? Where did this passion come from at such a young age?
Really excited to talk to you guys. I would say my dad, he played his whole life just recreationally. And I remember being 5, 6 years old, and we had a huge backyard at the time. And he would just take me out there with little kids' clubs and wiffle balls, and we just hit around. And he sparked the interest in me. I had played other sports growing up, but nothing really stuck with me like golf did. And golf just really matched my personality. I'm an only child. I'm super independent. And I really knew when I got to 9, 10 years old that golf, I wanted to pursue it full time. I didn't want to play any other sports. I wanted to play Division I college golf. And never in my life thought I'd be teaching golf, but here we are. And I didn't see that coming. But yeah, my dad was really the one that started me out. And then I had a fantastic golf instructor named Kurt Shear, who has worked with a lot of really good players, including myself, who also helped start the flame, kept me in it and kept me going. And Kurt and I worked together for almost 10 years. So I would say those two people.
Yeah, that's it's hard to get, I don't know, get kids involved. I have two daughters myself. My youngest daughter took to it for a short amount of time, and then she just kind of let it go. And it's pretty crazy to see what you've done and how much of it you've done, honestly. What was it like? What was your preparation like? A lot of people show up an hour early. They go to the range and they get ready for a tournament. What was that like for you?
It's like I said, I knew from a young age I only wanted to focus on golf. So I was going to school, and then I'd actually get out of school early when I was like a sophomore, junior in high school. And I would go immediately to Southern Dunes, my home golf course. And some days I'd have a lesson. Some days I'd be out there for 4 or 5 hours practicing, working on different things. I had the flexibility to do that. Like I said, I was an only child, so I was very lucky. My dad also would take me to practices, lessons, golf tournaments. He retired at a very early age, so we were so lucky and blessed to be able to do that. And yeah, just I would put in more hours than anyone else would. Kurt Scheer will tell you I was probably his hardest working student. He taught at Southern Dunes when I was, that was my home course and where I, when I was practicing. So he would see me all the time out there from 3 p.m. after school to 8 o'clock at night. And then I'd go home and I'd do homework like a kid has to do. And or I would weightlift. I was always doing something to get myself to the end goal, which was college golf, which Division I college golf. That was what my days looked like. I really did not have that much of a social life in high school because I knew I wanted to achieve these big goals. That led me to college golf, that led me to pro golf, and now I teach and I work for myself full time. It's funny how it all unfolded, but yeah, I had this inner motivation and I had this inner drive, and I don't see a lot of kids nowadays have that. When I was growing up playing golf, I had other girls that I knew that had that inner motivation and drive. I saw other boys, but nowadays you just don't really see that, which is really unfortunate. So I'm trying to cultivate that in some of my current students and push them a little bit because they have the talent. Yeah.
I did not realize that your history and relationship went so far back with Southern Dunes.
Yeah, Dunes was my home golf course. I started going there when I started working with Kurt. So I think I was like 11, 12. I don't know. It was a long time ago. It's a little blurry. And so that's where I practiced out of. And that's the range I worked on. And actually the teaching studio that I currently teach out of, where I took every single lesson with Kurt. So it's very nostalgic. Kurt no longer teaches. He's actually the general manager at Southern Dunes now. So that's cool because he's still there. You know, we've had a relationship for so long. We have so much history. And he helped me get my teaching career going. And he was like, I think you'd be great at it. He pushed me like he did for so many years to pursue teaching. I'm just so grateful that I can teach there. A lot of people know me there from when I was a kid. So it's a cool setup. I'm very blessed.
So as you progressed as a junior and moved into high school and stuff like that, how did it feel like you were obviously a really good golfer? Did it feel like it changed or got more competitive, or was it just the same for you because you were already so deep in competition?
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I played Indiana Junior Golf. I started out locally, and then I got to a point where I won the Indiana Girls State Junior Championship as a 14-year-old, which I think I am still the youngest to ever win that tournament. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure. And when I hit that point, I started to play all over the Midwest, not just in Indiana. So I played Golf Week Junior Tour. I was one of their first years to sign on to that tour. And I know the guys that run it, Alex and Grant Martin, they're fantastic guys. And they run Golf Week Junior Tour. And so I'd play all around the Midwest. And that was a step up in competition. And then once I got, I think I won 14 Golf Week. I don't know exactly, but I'm pretty sure it's 14 times. I was inducted into their Hall of Fame. And that was really cool. And so once I started to get freshman, sophomore in high school playing in Golf Week, I started earning status for AJGA or American Junior Golf Association. So then I started playing all over the country. So the competition levels kept going up and up, which is exactly what I wanted. And I'm glad I pushed myself to play in those bigger tournaments and play with older kids. But I think I got used to that at a very young age. So I was just very lucky with how my situation and my career went. I got so many great opportunities from people. And yeah, it's cool to talk about it.
Yeah, I'd imagine. That's why I looked up those numbers because I have a friend that's up in northern Indiana and I can't remember the college that he helps out at, but they struggle to find women golfers. They're like, he said, hey, if you can find me girls that can shoot in the 80s, I can probably get them a scholarship. And But to look at your record and all the accolades that you've accumulated over the years, it's just, it's very rare. And people look at the LPGA and stuff like that, and I don't think they really realize how those are anomalies. Me and John talk about all the time, and same thing on the PGA. They're the 0.01% of golfers that get seen on TV on that particular day. But the percentage is getting smaller and smaller. So what, in your opinion, what do you think is missing, or what do you think has changed to why juniors, that they aren't as competitive, or we're not seeing as many of them get involved? And I guess that maybe just golf. I can't speak to other sports. Softball is always used for girls. So is volleyball.
The biggest thing I've noticed is when I was growing up, starting out, learning golf, loving golf, there were no female golf professionals. There were no female teaching professionals. There weren't a lot of female golf role models. Like mine, when I was a kid, I remember Paula Creamer was on the LPGA tour at that time. She was one of my, like, a girl I looked up to. Right now on the LPGA, there's Nelly Korda. That's a big name. We all know that name. But I just think there's not a lot of female role models for girls. And a lot of my students that are females, I'm their only golf role model. And that's great, but I wish there were more for them. For me, I didn't need a ton of female golf role models, but I feel like some other girls, they need more. They need more than a Nelly Korda, right? Whereas on the PGA Tour, there's a plethora. There's Scottie Scheffler. There's Rory McIlroy. There's so many. So I don't know. That's the biggest thing I see right now. And so I try to be that role model. I know I'm not Nelly Korda, but I achieved a lot. And I have such a passion for males in golf. And that's one of the reasons why I started teaching. Yeah, I would say that's the biggest difference that I see.
Yeah, and I don't know if it comes down to whether or not maybe you have somebody in your family that's caught the golf bug and introduced you to it. I don't know where I am on the scale, but I think a lot of it is, it comes down to the availability to be able to go out on the golf course. John and I have talked about this over and over, that not only with the Tiger boom and not only with COVID, and I wish we could stop bringing that up, but that boom in golf, it was already to a point where we wanted to somehow figure out a way to play faster so that golf courses could get more people onto the course to make revenue. And I think it's hard to get kids out on the golf course. And if you want to get kids outside and get them into golf and off of games, it's hard to do that when you're trying to push them into the simulators to play games on simulators during the summer, because you're trying to get all these people out to make money during the summer on the golf course. And I think that's where a lot of it's lost. And I know Indiana Golf, they have a lot of programs. We've had them on, and they'll take like plastic clubs or whatever, if you can get involved and donate those to school, and they'll make it part of a gym program and stuff like that. And that's all well and good, but there's just no time. I just don't know how we get them on the golf course and get them interested.
I try to in my lessons. I'm very lucky at Southern Dunes. I have the availability and the flexibility to take my lessons out on the golf course. So I will try to take those kids. We will work on the range. We'll work on technique. We'll work on fundamentals. But then I'll try to take them out on our par 3 golf course or our regular golf course and play with them so that they see me do it. So that kind of sparks their interest even more. They have somebody to look up to and they can see themselves playing. So I try to do that at my home. But you're right. I wish we had more of that because, putting them in a simulator, they get bored pretty easily. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I do a lot of kids golf camps for beginner kids who maybe aren't ready for one-on-one lessons. And I try to make those camps really fun. We'll do instruction, but we'll also do games at the end, and we'll have little treats and prizes and things like that. I think we can grow the game that way. But we need some help. We need some more people to step in and be excited about golf so that kids see that.
Yeah, I have a gentleman on named Bob Kitchen who has Maple Hill Golf up in Michigan. I have a humongous junior program. And what I thought was neat was the fact that they set up during the summer, they'll set up stations and they get an idea of kids are, we all are anymore. We're 30 seconds of the TikTok generation of where we're bing bang or things got to move fast. And they'll set up stations and do that and have them over here chipping at rings or whatever, or chipping into a little pool or stuff like that and move them around to different stations and do odd, just do games like that.
Yeah, you got to keep them interested. You got to make it fun for them in the beginning. If it's not fun for them in the beginning, they'll lose interest. And you have to get creative and you have to show them patience in golf because there's a lot of patience lost in golf, as we all know. So that's something that I struggle with every single day with kids and lessons. It's just reminding them to be patient and that this is a process.
Right. I just had a problem with that last one at Purgatory. So there's that. So let's back up just a little bit. How did you feel being a young female golfer? I guess you had it a little bit better at Southern Dunes as far as them accepting you. Did you ever get an experience at another golf course that maybe you just went with somebody and played at? Or did that ever happen for you? Were you always just going to tournaments?
Yeah.
Just get an idea. Did you feel accepted? Is that kind of you think that's a problem that we have?
Yeah.
Is that girls just don't feel like they can... guys will make a tee time anywhere, but I'm just saying,
I'm glad that you brought that up. I think a little bit. I personally never felt that way growing up, but currently I have talked with some females in golf that either I give lessons to or I just know, not at Southern Dunes, but at other places, they don't feel as comfortable. They don't want to be paired with random men. There's not a lot of playing opportunities for them. Let's say at the course that they belong to, there's no women's league because there's not enough women involved to run one. So yeah, I think I've noticed and I've heard a little bit currently that some women don't feel as comfortable. And that's one of the reasons why they come and work with me is because they do feel comfortable and they do have an ally in golf because I'm a female. I really want to start a women's league at Southern Dunes. That's one of my goals. I'm hoping to do that maybe next year. This year, I exploded with business, and so I just wasn't able to do it, which is a blessing and a curse. But I really do want to start a women's league on the South Side at Southern Dunes for women who you can be a beginner. You could have played for 40 years. Come and join us. We'll play 9 holes, kind of like a 9-and-wine type of thing, and we'll just build community through that. So that's something I want to do. I want to get off the ground. Hopefully I can do it. But yeah, I think women are feeling more accepted in golf, especially with social media. I think there are more females going out and showing on social media that they're playing. So that is good. That helps us. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's huge. That's another thing John and I are always talking about is just the effect that social media has had, not just on golf in general. More importantly, it's had a big impact on women's golf because, like we said a minute ago, you're not just looking at the top 0.01% of golfers anymore. You can get on YouTube and you can click, and next thing you know, you've got women that are playing golf some are playing at a high level, some not so much, but they're still on there, and you can see that. And we've also talked about how TV sets this bar that's so high and so unattainable that I think a lot of people they're like, man, I can't play like that. Or they think they should play like that. Cause I know we've all played. I've played with a guy that just started playing. And then the second round, he's upset about his score. He's upset about a shot he just hit. I'm like, dude, this is the second time you've played. And I'm like, that's how quickly expectations creep into the golf world, that you hit one good shot out of 120 and you expect that to be the commonality every time.
I agree with you. It's a highlight reel. Yeah, we're just in the highlight reels, and it's not real life. That's not reality. I give a lesson to a really good student of mine, Yeah, they're performing pretty well, but we're working on things. We're constantly evolving. We're constantly getting better. There's going to be some stinkers. There's going to be some bad hits. There's going to be some bad holes played. It's about how you handle that. For me, I learned from someone how to be so mentally tough. I try to teach my people that. It's very hard, to your point. There's not a lot of patience. People expect to come into a lesson or go play and look like Scottie Scheffler, and that's just not reality. Yeah.
So what do you teach? Because this is probably great information for me. I see John's kind of snickering over there, but what are you teaching to try to help with the patience and help with the mental game with not only with
Well, number one is just setting a good example for them. So if I'm frustrated in the lesson, they're looking at me, especially little kids. They're very observant. They like to copy and imitate you. And so if I'm frustrated, they're going to see that. If I have a negative attitude, they're going to see that. So that's the first thing I think about. And the second thing is what I said, just being mentally tough. If they're struggling with something that we're learning, okay, let's pause for a second. Let's take a breath. Or what are you feeling right now? Let's try this to help you. Just teaching them that, hey, we might be struggling right now in this lesson or out on the golf course, but it's not the end of the world. That teaches them patience if they see it from me, right? Or I might hit golf balls next to one of my students and they see me go through my routine. They see me play. They see me react to maybe a great shot or a not so great shot. So I think it's just being a good role model and helping them learn from my past experiences and what I did in certain situations. And the ones that really are internally motivated and want to be better will build that mental toughness lesson by lesson, tournament by tournament. The ones who get easily frustrated and who aren't patient, I believe don't have as much inner motivation, inner drive. So I try again to set a good example, but it's hard sometimes. It depends on the person. So,
yeah, you're going to really upset a lot of people in our friends group because not a lot of them have any.
It's golf. Like, it's the hardest sport. Yeah. And there were times I wasn't always patient, but I had to learn because I had a coach, I had a swing coach who held me to that expectation. That's what I try to do with my people.
Yeah, I think that's what makes you've done through your junior career so remarkable is the fact that it's very difficult to find that. You know what I mean? It's especially in golf. I'm not I can't speak to other sports. I know exactly how frustrating and hard golf can be. And it's just me and John say all the time, I'd rather hit a good shot out of bounds than a bad shot inbounds. You know what I mean? I'd rather feel like I flucked it than anything else. So how much of that are you seeing in the kids? Do you look at any of the kids that you have and go, but this kid could go somewhere or this kid has it? Or
see that often, or how rare is it? I see it every once in a while. It's not very often, unfortunately. And I've talked to other instructors as well, and they experience the same things. Kurt Shear, my golf instructor, obviously worked with me. I was his best female student. He also coached Patrick Rogers, who plays on the PGA Tour. A lot of people know who Patrick is. So Kurt had two really good in his career of 30 years. It's not very often, I think, that you get a kid that really wants to work at it. You see that sparkle, that glimmer in their eye, have that inner motivation. I have two right now that I really think could follow in my footsteps or go off and do really good things in golf. And they're two boys. So I want them to just keep that inner motivation, keep that mental toughness. Let's keep working at it. But it is frustrating because I wish I had more students that were like that. I'm human. I wish that I could have that. But it comes from the kid. It comes from that person. So hopefully I'll be lucky in my teaching career to have more. But yeah, I wish I had some more girls that had that. Kids surprise you. Things can change. Next year at this time, I might have a girl that I'm currently working with now who might feel that way. So we'll see. I'll keep you updated on how my people are progressing.
What's your ratio right now from to boys to girls?
Yeah, actually, right now, it's about 50-50. When I started, when I started teaching, it was like 90-10 girls to boys. Now it's about 50-50. It's evened out. So that's good because I love working with girls. I can relate to them because I'm a girl, obviously. But I also really teaching young boys. I think they're fun. They're funny. And some of them really, I have a really good time with and we have a good relationship. So yeah, it's about 50-50 right now.
Here's a tough question. Now, which one's easier? Would you rather teach? I don't mean between girls and boys, but what I was going to say is between juniors and
that
adults.
That depends on the
which
day.
Which one's easier?
Because that depends on the day and the time of year. Honestly, I would have to say that I would rather teach juniors. But I do teaching adults because you teach kids a lot and it can get frustrating at times. I have great adult students. They're going to hear this and be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get some text messages after this interview comes out. But yeah, I would say I'd rather teach kids. I'm 26 years old. So it wasn't too long ago that I was a kid in golf. So I feel like maybe that's why I would say I like to teach juniors because I'm not that far removed from where they're at. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
That good answer. Yeah. I think you yeah, covered your bases if you get some of your students.
Yeah.
So what was the step like going into college golf and how was that in comparison to your AGGA
days? It was more difficult than I thought it was going to be. Playing on a golf team in college is great, but I just don't believe that golf is a team sport. It's an individual sport. That's just my opinion. So I think I did better individually as a golfer than I did on a team. And that was just me. Some people thrive on teams and that's great. But for me, that just wasn't the case. But yeah, the jump was definitely hard, I would say. I enjoyed my Golf Week Junior Tour days and my AJGA days a lot more than some of my college days. But college golf was a great experience. It was a goal I set to achieve and I achieved it. So I'm very proud of myself for that. If I could go back, I would do things differently. I think we could all say that. I was a kid when I made the decision to go to Kentucky. Now I'm 26 years old. I maybe would have chosen a different school, but it thing led me to where I am now. And now I teach and I work for myself and I have amazing people I work with. So I'm very blessed and the Lord, his plan was unfolded in front of me and I didn't know at the time, but now I do. And I'm just really grateful for where I'm at. Yeah.
I don't think that team golf or that scenario works for everybody. I think we've seen that throughout, whether it's men or women. I can understand that for sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes the shoe just doesn't fit. That's just not where you're supposed to be. And that's that's how we all grow and move. That's how we do it with jobs and anything else. So what would be your goals over the next, let's say 5 years? Where do you see the Claire Cameron Golf Academy going? I know you've already talked about wanting to start a women's league there. And I think that's probably that's something you want to do, but I think that's outside of what you want to do with the academy. Where do you see that in say the next 5 years?
I would say, I would love to get to, maybe in the next couple years, 250 students total. I currently now have 175, which is a lot, and that's great. But I would love to maybe get to 250. That's a goal I have for myself. Another goal is I want to continue to grow my kids' camps. I do seasonal kids' camps. So every season, I have a set of camps that come out for kids. I'd like to grow that enrollment. And I would love to have a couple of students in the next couple years who go off to play college golf. I really want to help my current students and students that are going to come to me in the future, help them achieve the goal of going to go play college golf and or professional golf. So I would say those are probably my top three biggest goals for my academy, the women's league, like you had mentioned, and maybe if I get to that 250 mark of students, I could hire an assistant instructor. Right now, it's just me. I'm the only instructor at Southern Dunes, and I teach everybody myself. I'm a one-man show, so a one-woman show. So, yeah, that's where I see things going, and I'm honestly just going to let the Lord lead me. Hopefully, I can achieve those goals, but we'll see what happens. So,
well, I think that's great. I think that's a
thank you.
It seems like that's a pretty achievable plan. Might be hard to find the right kids that are going to go off to play college golf. That might be difficult just because of, especially with boys, it's so unbelievably difficult. It seems like for boys to make it to golf teams anymore. What's your feeling on where college is now and the fact that now a lot of these players are getting paid with the NIL deal and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Not saying that would have changed anything for you. But obviously, if you were doing it at this time with the level you were playing at, that may or may not have been an option. But where do you see that? How does that make you feel? Does that change? Do you think that changes the college experience or changes the way that people approach?
Yeah, I think it
collegiate
for
athletics?
Sure changes how people view collegiate athletics. I graduated high school in 2017. And then in the fall of 2017 is when I started on the golf team at University of Kentucky. There was none of getting paid to play. There was none of that stuff. So I am new to that as well. I'm new to all of these new rules. That wasn't a thing. Social media was not super big when I was getting recruited. There were not that had college accounts. It was really just word of mouth. They would come to watch you play. You'd send emails. They would see your results. They'd come watch you play. And then you would talk on the phone. It was word of mouth. A lot of things have changed. I think that what I see a lot of kids now on social media having two different accounts. They have a personal account and then they have a golf account. Yeah, they're trying to sell themselves. And I get that. They're trying to market themselves. But I think the best way to do that is just the scores you shoot, how good of a player you are, not necessarily what you post on social media about yourself. So yeah, a lot has changed. I think golfers getting paid to play is just interesting. I don't have really an opinion because I'm so foreign to that. I got a full ride scholarship to play at Kentucky, but that was it. Yeah. I'm sorry. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, not everybody has an opinion on it, or frankly, a lot of people don't care either way. I'm just curious when I talk to somebody that played in collegiate athletics, how they perceive that, what they think one way or the other, or not at all. It's not that big a deal. I think it's the golfers that play in college are the ones that are, I don't know, they're not getting the best of what, say, football players, golf players, stuff like that, because we play in this weird arena to where, okay, the college, you can get NIL money, but like we saw with Nick Dunlap a year or so ago, you go out and win a tournament, you're going to get shop credit, because if you don't, then you're going to get an NCAA, you're going to get some kind of violation, or the USGA is going to take away your amateur status and now call you a professional. And nowhere else, no other collegiate athletics do you have that issue. And they clearly haven't worked that out yet, but it's just interesting to hear. And I understand, it's wild to hear that kids are having two different accounts, because everybody is trying to build their brand, so to speak. And it's something they could fall back on. You look at some of these YouTube golfers, they're making a lot of money. And I don't know if you're familiar, but Grant Horvat, just off his YouTube channel alone, is like $15,000 a month.
So
he
different.
Makes off that.
It's just so different now. There just was none of that when I was in high school and college. There were no YouTube golfers. There were no TikTok golfers. It's just really different. And it makes me feel almost old. And I'm 26 to be like, wow, we didn't have that back then. We had Instagram and Twitter, but they were not used for golf. Like they weren't used for golf content. So I know what you mean. I feel the same way.
Claire, I'm older than Google.
Right.
Yes. So I don't want you to feel too bad. I think that's why John's chuckling over there.
That makes me feel better. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. And I just wanted to ask you, since you have college experience, when you look at where you're heading or where you are, chuckled about being a golf coach, now that you, what made you do that? What made you go, hey, I'm going to try this out? Because it seems like the way you spoke about it was obviously
never
it wasn't
in my life.
You
I never thought I would teach golf.
Down.
I never thought I would coach. Yeah. So I played a couple years of college golf. And then after about 15, 16, 17 years, somewhere in there of playing competitively, junior career, college career, playing as an amateur, honestly got a little burnt out of playing golf. My experience at Kentucky was not what I had hoped for, and just felt burnout and wanted to stay in golf, but I just did not want to be a player for a little bit. I wanted to take some time away from it. And I was still in college around when COVID was happening. And so I'm finishing up college and COVID's happening. We're not sure what's going on. I had a lot of people, family, friends, just people who knew me down here in Greenwood, who had always asked me, like, will you please teach my 5-year-old son how to swing a golf club? Will you please teach them here and there? And I was always like, okay, yeah, I'll do it when I have some time. And it was very informal when I started teaching. It was, like I said, during COVID. So nobody had anything to do. We were all stuck inside. And so I would go over to people's homes. I'd wear a mask and I would give a golf lesson to them, having no teaching experience, in their golf simulator in their basement, teach their kids how to play. It, like I said, it was very informal, but it happened very naturally and organically. And I started to realize, oh, wow, maybe I can help people improve. I know the golf swing. I've learned everything myself. I've taken lessons for years. I learned from a great technical coach. And I've gone out and I've done all of this myself. I've been a competitive player. I've played at some of the highest levels. And that's what started it. And it piqued my interest. And then, so I did that all through COVID and went to my instructor, Kurt Shear. And I said, hey, I want to give this a shot. I want to do this formally. Can I do it here? You're no longer teaching. You're running the golf course. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. I think he'd be great at it. He fully supported me. He's supported me ever since. He's been wonderful. And I just started doing it at Southern Dunes, started building my book, building my clientele. And yeah, here we are. So like I said, I have 175 students currently, which I never thought in a million years I'd have that many. They keep me on my toes. It's a full-time job for me. Like I said, I work for myself. So that's how it started. And I really think it was good for me to take a break from competitive play after a career where I achieved everything I set out to achieve, just wanted a different route in golf. So I'm happy that I'm here. I do see myself in the future playing competitively again. It just depends on my life and how my golf academy does. But right now, it's just my main focus is helping people get better in teaching. And it's really fun to stay in the golf world after being in it for so long.
John, you want to ask some questions? I do this all the time, Claire. I monopolize it. John bobbles his head. Yeah. And sooner or later, I'm going to get a word in edgewise. But this is how we interact. John, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Welcome. Welcome myself back to the podcast, I guess. A lot of great information.
Thanks.
Obviously, I got some chuckles, especially around the stress management. I would say sometimes Steve and I grew up playing golf. Right. Steve started later, but we have a lot of in our golf approach. We like to have fun. We like to listen to some music, but we still want to hit good golf shots. And I think this year for both of us, a big realization was, what is a good golf shot for the amount of time that we put into our golf games? I work full time. Golf is a hobby for us. And I think he mentioned earlier, flushing a golf shot, no matter where it ends up, is awesome for us. We're happy. We compressed the golf ball. Did it get on the green? Maybe it didn't. Who knows? But our scores are, my low round this year is 72, but I've also had a 92 this year. I just had just as much fun on the 92 round as I did 72. Well, I think with, especially with these younger golfers, it's hard to let them know that so like sucking is okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to have bad rounds. It's okay to have good rounds, but are you able to enjoy it?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's the hard thing. Cause I used to get frustrated when I was 10 years old, trying to go out there and be like, Greg, I'll date myself. Greg Norman was like golf hero. Right. So that's way back in the '90s. So I think that's pretty funny. What do you do? I'm assuming you still go out and play rounds of golf.
As much as I can.
Occasionally. What do you do when you are not striking the ball the way that you expect yourself to be able to strike the golf ball?
I am able to put things in perspective. I'm able to not beat myself up. I'm able to rely on the mental toughness of just, hey, I did not hit that one the way I should have. Do I get frustrated? Absolutely. But I don't let it consume me because I've done this for so long. And I've played at the highest levels where I could not afford to make that mistake. I could not afford to let a bad shot consume me and ruin my round. So I rely on that.
Okay. You're able to just put it away and then just focus on the next shot.
Yeah. I try to obviously play as much as I can and practice as much as I can, but it is very difficult when you're out in the hot sun for 9-10 hours a day working with people. At the end of the day, you want to go home, and that's my office. So at the end of the day, as you guys know, you want to go home. So it's hard. It's hard to, some days I don't hit it very well or I don't putt very well, but I know that, again, I just rely on perspective. I know that some days are going to stink and that I'm not a bad golfer, that all the work I've done in lessons, playing golf my whole life, I have the fundamentals. I have all the techniques down. I know how to swing the golf club. It's just, for me, it's about just reminding myself of the confidence that I have in my golf swing, in myself. So I try to do that for my students. Some of them can do that. Some of them cannot. So that's a challenge. But yeah, I would agree with you.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, curious, as Steve and I dabble in high stress rounds and somewhat less stressful now that we're older and we know what alcohol is. Sometimes that helps out. Sometimes that doesn't. I have a couple of good ones after at the turn.
Yeah.
Sometimes turns it around. So what is your favorite, or I guess your most prized win that you've completed, whether it be in junior golf or high school or college? Like, what was like one tournament or one round that has just lasted with you throughout the years that you're like so proud of yourself for? Maybe it's not even your lowest round. Maybe it's just a round like turned it over 180.
Yeah, there's multiple really that come to mind. I would say when I qualified for my fifth U.S. Girls Junior Championship, because you have to go through qualifying. That was my fifth time qualifying for the U.S. Girls Junior Tournament. I think I shot maybe like 71, 70 that day. I just remember feeling so much pressure because I wanted to get that fifth U.S. Girls Junior Championship medal that the USGA gives out. I wanted that so badly. I got that.
Yeah.
But I just remember being so mentally tough in that round, hanging in there, playing a really long qualifying golf course that day. And I had no caddy. So I was doing it all on my own. I was being my own caddy. And that round sticks with me. What else? I shot 68 at one of the AJGA Girls Junior Championships in Furman, South Carolina, Furman University's home golf course. That was a big round for me because I probably had 20 to 30 Division I college coaches following my group that day, a huge horde of them. And I was used to it. I was used to having college coaches follow me, but not that many in one setting. So that was nerve-wracking. I had a lot of adrenaline in that round. And I remember just putting up a really good score and being extremely proud of myself. Any of my Golf Week Junior Tour wins, those rounds stick with me. Those final rounds, winning the events, closing that win, those wins out, stick with me. As soon as we get off this interview, I'm going to think of more. But
of course.
Yeah, I would say that those are maybe my top three or four.
Okay. Wow. Being an only child, I was basically an only child. My older brother and sister are 10 and 11 years older. So like they were already out of the house when I was going up. I played individual sports, or I did wrestling and golf because I didn't want to let a team down, or I didn't want the team to let me down. So then when high school golf came around, it was a different individual sport with a team aspect, right? But I didn't really care. I don't know if it was similar. Yeah. I didn't really care what the team, I wanted them to do well, but it was really more of, we competed with each other every week to see who was going to be 1, 2, and 3 spot and who were going to be 4th and 5th. So my goal for myself was always to obviously get number 1 or 2 spot on the team. So I think that helped me in high school because we were so competitive internally with our own team that when we went to the golf match, we played 9 holes in Northwest Indiana. It could be snow on the ground when we played. Did you have any competition on your high school team like that would drive you to, oh, I want to make sure Becca's not going to beat me?
Unfortunately, no, I did not. Okay. I only played a year and a half of high school golf. I did not play high school golf over all 4 years. The reasoning for that was I was getting invited playing in big golf week, U.S. Girls Juniors, AJGA events. For me, high school golf was not the path I wanted to go down. I wanted to play nationally. And unfortunately, the high school team that I was on, no, I did not feel like anybody pushed me. It was all internal motivation. I wish I could have had that experience, but unfortunately I didn't.
Okay. I was just curious.
I could see that. And I don't think you're tooting your own horn there. I think if you look at your record as a junior, I could totally understand that. I could really understand why, you want further education, go to college. But with your background, I could really understand why being on a team would just be so out of place for you with as much as you had played as a junior. You played singularly your entire life.
It had nothing to do with high school. It had nothing to do with any of that. It just was, for me, I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted to play nationally, as I've told you guys. I just had different priorities and they did not align with high school golf. And I just felt like it was a waste of time. And I hate to say that because I know there's a lot of people that it's great for them and that's awesome. But for me, it just was not a good, it just wasn't a good thing for me. It wasn't a good thing for my family. It wasn't helping me achieve my goals. It was getting in the way of lessons. It was getting in the way of school. It was just getting in the way of too much. And I was already missing so much school playing all around the country. So that didn't help. Just logistically, it was also not great. But I have kids. I work with 3 of the starting girls on the varsity team at Center Grove High School. And Center Grove is very good in athletics. Their golf team's very good. And I'm so happy for those girls that they have that team environment where it's competitive. And I think playing high school golf for them is great. But for me at the time, going to high school, I think I started high school 2013 to 2017. It just wasn't like it is now.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think even our high school team, Northern Indiana, we only had 3 girls on the team at all. So it was tough, right? They couldn't even fulfill like the whole squad, which is sad because my one neighbor whose dad was a golf course superintendent was awesome. Like she went to state her freshman and sophomore year. And then that wasn't like she quit the golf team because there was no three-year competition locally.
Yeah.
And she just got out of it. I can definitely get that. Do you think now that golf is more popular with girls realm? Like I just saw Zionsville School posted like a record low on one of their team, like with one, I think 3 of them shot under par, 1 shot a 65, 68 and a 70, I believe I just saw in one of their matches. Do you think access to golf simulators, all the like the mental, the physical training that's available now, like you have all these TPIs and fitness garages and all these like mentally and physically access to this, and then plus like equipment, do you think that would have catapulted your career any differently with the advances of technology?
Yeah, maybe it would have helped if I would have had the stuff that we have now back then. I mean, yeah, I'm sure maybe it would have helped me. I was very lucky. Kurt Scheer had a launch monitor. He had simulators for the winter time for our regular lessons. So we were doing that when I was in high school, but it wasn't launch okay. monitors were not as popular back then as they are now. And we all know that. But yeah, we were using that and digging into some data in lessons, but he was very careful. He did not want me to get too into data. But obviously going to play college golf, he knew I needed that knowledge and I needed to know what my numbers were. And also that was very helpful in the wintertime when we were learning and all that. But yeah, there's a lot out there now. I think there's maybe a little too much out there now for people. It's getting loud. It's getting chaotic. And not everybody can go buy a TrackMan. I wish we all could. That'd be great. But yeah, it's a blessing and a curse. That's how I look at it. It's great to have TPI and fitness and mental coaching, but there's people like me and there's people like Patrick Rogers who did it without all that stuff and we were successful. I think it just depends on the person and what they need, who they work with. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I tell my coach, Jeremy Allen at Hickory Stick, I'm like, don't keep this so dumb, like speaking to a third grader. Okay. I don't care what the launch monitor, I just want to know, like, in simple, stupid terms, what I need to do. It's me. And I think everybody's different. Last question I have for you. If you hit a pipe drive down the middle of the fairway, okay, you probably do a lot. Steve and I, not as much, but we're probably pretty close. And it lands in a divot. Should you be able to pull that thing out of that divot and put it on the short stuff?
In my opinion, I think you should. Because you hit that great drive and you're not getting rewarded for it. That's how I see it. You hit a terrible drive and you go in the rough, you go in the woods, you go in the water. Yeah. Like you hit a bad drive, you're reaping what you sow. But yeah, if you hit one right down the middle, it's beautiful. I think you should get to move it. I think that's just unfair. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Perfect. I answered that question great.
I at one time. And up until recently, agreed with that. I do think it's horrible, but I had a experience with an Irish gentleman that said to me, I'll have to paraphrase, I don't remember exactly what he said. He goes, if you hit a ball and it bounces off a tree, should you have to go put that ball back behind the tree?
I see it from that angle too. Yeah.
And I said, I guess I understand that. You got to take the good breaks with the bad breaks and the bad breaks with the good breaks. I said, I get it. But I said, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
But I think for professionals, who this is all they do. This is how they make their money. They're playing on the best manicured possible surfaces that they could play on. And for them to somehow land in a divot to where somebody did not put any sand in it, or the ball would have just rolled right over it. I said, I totally disagree with that. We're going to do it as amateurs pretty much no matter what anyway. You're paying to play on a golf course, and if you don't want to hit out of a divot,
I see both sides. Like, I see your perspective. I get that. Yeah. But I'm also like, you hit a great shot. You deserve the reward. Just as the former player, I'm like, I don't know.
Claire, what tees have you played out at Southern Dunes?
Yes, I played all the tees.
I'm gonna hold on really tight to this desk I'm sitting at before I ask you this question. What's your lowest round at Southern Dunes? From the blues or the tips?
That's a good question. I'm really
scared of this answer.
From like the blues, maybe 69. The thing about answering questions like this is I remember, that was when I was a college player. Now I'm an adult. So things are a little blurry. I remember, but I don't remember perfectly. Yeah, I would say.
I'm just going to say right now, it makes it like worse a young adult. You said when you were a kid.
So yeah. I would say, 68, 69, I think. But then from the women's tees, 63, 62, 61, somewhere in there.
Yeah, we don't need to hear all that part. We'll just keep it back to the blue. So the real question is, based off that feedback, when Steve and I come down, we're going to have to come down and play against you. Steve and I will be playing two-man, one best against your score then. Same team.
Sounds good.
And then we'll see what happens.
Yeah. We might need to We might need to scramble from the women's tees and put her on the blues.
And I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Well, Claire, we really appreciate your time. We know how busy you are.
Yeah.
And it was great to finally connect. And definitely we'd love to come down there if you ever have the time to entertain a couple hacks in a nine-hole match or something
you're
like that.
Welcome.
And
But
it's great to see, and it's great to see you as a woman in golf and now teaching and trying to get more kids involved. That's really what me and John tried to set out to do, stuff like that. And it's awesome. I'm appreciative, and I think it's just great. I can't say enough about it. And then I hope that you should go into work and shame Kurt not already having a women's league. When I come in there, I'm going to tell him that. I'm going to ask him why he doesn't already have a women. You know what? Okay. Not to ramble on, but was an assumption that I already had. I already assumed that there was a women's league out there. I already assumed there's a women's league at every course. And now my mind's a little bit blown, especially in a community of the size of Southern Dunes.
And people have had that same reaction. They think the same way you do. We have a really big men's league at Southern Dunes, and that's wonderful. But I think there's a need for it. I'm seeing that. Kurt and I are seeing that. It'll happen in the right timing. Maybe it wasn't meant to happen this year, but next year or the year after that, maybe it'll be the perfect timing for it. So we just want to give women an opportunity to play and feel comfortable and build that community. And I'm happy to do that and pioneer that at Southern Dunes. I think Kurt and I are making Southern Dunes more modern, and that it wasn't modern to begin with, but we're making it more modern, and we're making it more kid-friendly, more family-friendly. We have great, for the south side of Indianapolis and Greenwood Center Grove area, we have great facilities. It's a very big clubhouse. I have my own teaching studio, grass learning tee box. We have a great range. We have a par 3 golf course that's in fantastic shape, which is great for kids. It's great for beginner golfers. And we have a Gary Player Design Championship golf course. So we're in a pretty good spot, and we just want to continue to build it. And we want everybody to just come and enjoy playing golf, whether you're male, female, a kid, a beginner. We want you to feel comfortable. And I think we've done a pretty good job so far. So you guys are always welcome. And I would love to have you down so you can see my home, my office. And I appreciate you having me on the podcast. It was a pleasure meeting both of you and talking to both of you. And I would love to do it again.
We will. Yeah. I think I'll stay in contact with you and see if we can't just make a time to at least come down there, maybe in your office or in your studio, and we could record there.
Yeah, I would love that.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I would love that. Maybe we can get some students of mine or Kurt or somebody to join us as well. I think that'd be cool, because Kurt obviously has had a wonderful teaching career and he has a lot of knowledge and experience. Yeah, I'm happy for any opportunities. So let me know.
All right, everybody. Thanks again to Claire Cameron and the Claire Cameron Golf Academy at Southern Dunes on the southwest side of Indianapolis. Claire, I appreciate you joining. John, not so much, because I look at him every week. But you guys enjoy the rest of your lovely Friday afternoon or Friday evening, and we will talk again later.